The contributions of African Americans to our cinema heritage is immense and goes all the way back to the beginning of the movies. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. February is Black History Month, and it's a good time to discuss some of the African American filmmaking pioneers, both in front of and behind the camera, who have contributed so much to our movies and our culture. Joining me to discuss some favorite important filmmakers and films is Felipa Solis, Executive Director of El Paso Pro Musica, fellow member of the Broadcast Film Critics Association, and avid cinephile. Good morning.
Good morning. It's wonderful to be here, and what an important topic we're discussing today.
Well, and thank you for doing that, because you and I were discussing the other day the genesis of this. We were talking about all of the amazing African Americans on the rise, particularly directors. We were talking about Ava DuVernay and Dee Reese, who was her Mudbound just did stellar work in the award season. Steve McQueen, Barry Jenkins, Jordan Peele.
It was
amazing.
Was the show of the year. Get Out was truly so remarkable. And listening to a recent interview with him, with Terry Gross, he talked about all of the trials and tribulations of not only putting this film together, but the scope of what it was about, and basically as far as interracial couples,
right. But
with a horror genre. Incredible. His inspirations being anything from Rosemary's Baby to Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, and how it turned, but what a turn he made in the cinema this year.
And of course, all of these people are standing on the shoulders of some people that we really appreciate, but a lot of these filmmakers we're about to talk about, most people don't really know of their existence or their history or legacy. So let's just dive right in. You've got a list there of some people you wanted to spotlight.
Well, and that's interesting that you say that, because in essence, at the time, they couldn't, because they were so enveloped, if you will, in their race. And how many movie stars, actors that we know of today who rose above it, the Sammy Davis Juniors and such.
Sidney Poitier.
How many times they couldn't eat in the commissary? How many times they were not allowed to go to the incredible Hollywood parties by virtue of their race? Some of the most talented people in our generation. And so with that, it's kind of interesting to dance with the ones who brung us all in the world of film. In the last 50 years, Melvin Van Peebles was a filmmaker who truly made a mark. He was very ingenious, also kind of very bohemian in his lifestyle, doing a lot of work in Europe because there was not a lot of work here to do in Hollywood and elsewhere, although he was one of the first African Americans to be nominated for Tony Awards, and then began directing and writing his own films. One of the most interesting that he did was a film starring Godfrey Cambridge called Watermelon Man, which, if you look at the way that film is structured, it's very interesting how Get Out almost mirrors it a bit.
Interesting.
And this was a story of a man who was a very racist white man who wakes up one morning and discovers that he is indeed black. And it's just so brilliantly done, and kind of paved the way for this very intricate, innovative, and a strange little filmmaker named Melvin Van Peebles. He then made a film called Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song.
Of course.
Which is
notorious film. The
notorious film that launched the entire blaxploitation industry, if you will, of filmmaking in the 70s that allowed African American black actors and actresses to be the leads in films.
Right.
And not only were the soundtracks incredible, the direction was incredible, the acting was amazing, and these people were so gifted and talented, and yet they created their own genre. This film, he used every cent he owned, and because it was only released in two theaters, the soundtrack was from a little group called Earth, Wind, and Fire, and he was able to release that, make money, and now it's in about every list known to man as important films of the last century. It was a political resonance of the black struggle that was the underlying core of this film that was able to launch a series of films, actors, directors that truly made a difference.
And Melvin Van Peebles, independent filmmaker coming out of the 60s and 70s. I wanted to go way, way back to another independent filmmaker, Oscar Michaud, long before Melvin Van Peebles. This man who's was the son of actual slaves.
Yes.
He was born in the 1880s In 1919, he made his first film, and he was an entrepreneur. He formed his own film company, one of the first black-owned film companies, and he made a film called The Homesteader based on a novel that he wrote himself, and he himself had been a homesteader. That's how old he was. But over the next 40-some years, he directed and wrote and shot and produced some 42 feature films, all with all-black casts. These would have been showing typically in race theaters, but they were made for black audiences. They were filled with black stars, often salacious titles and subject matter, but also poignant stories that really went to the heart of the black experience in America between the 20s and the 40s. He died in 1951. Oscar Michaud is just one of those huge names that should be better known. He made one particular film, Body and Soul, with Paul Robeson, someone we're going to talk about in a minute, that is really, really a fine Robeson film. So a few of these exist. Unfortunately, a lot of his films from the silent period, like most silent films, are gone from us.
Yes.
But there is a new biography out on him. Thankfully, it's the first biography I know of. And so maybe in the coming years, people will know the name Oscar Michaud as a pioneer of black cinema and black producing, which is really important.
Even as we talk about Dancing with the Ones Who Brung You, someone like Melvin Van Peebles, that was it. You had to take ownership of what you were doing in order to make your message, your art, to get it out there.
And with no strings attached, because the unfortunate circumstances of racism and the power structure in this country kept directors like Oscar Michaud and Melvin Van Peebles from being able to do studio work, but it also liberated them to do whatever they wanted. There was no one telling them, you can't make that film. They went out, they did it themselves, and often are covered topics that no other films of their time were covering.
Which launched the huge independent genre that we have now, where people want to speak their minds through their celluloid. We are talking about some incredible people, but there are so many people who starred in films. You bring up Paul Robeson. He was, in essence, a baritone, an operatic baritone. He also was a lawyer. He was a brilliantly educated man. He was very politically centric. He starred in a number of plays, films in the 1930s, but then became very involved in the civil rights movement. And he was very much a supporter of U.S. war efforts, but also was tied in with supporting pro-Soviet policies, which is what put him on the top of the list in the McCarthy era. He was what he called himself an anti-colonialist, and though he did create what was referred to as the Harlem Renaissance. So he was such an inspiration to so many black actors, actresses, singers, educators, lawyers, academicians, but yet, because of his politics, he was brought down and had to leave the country. And actually, he was deported. His passport was taken away.
Yeah. And it was his time in England, I think it was, where he really became more radical in his labor movement work. He made a really good film in 1940 in England, The Proud Valley. People can find this online. It's a Welsh minor protest march film, and he's right in there with them, and there's almost no acknowledgement of his blackness. He's with a bunch of Welsh miners, and they're just accepting him for who he is, and it's a fabulous little film from 1940, The Proud Valley. I wanted to jump forward to someone a little more contemporary, but also underknown, Charles Burnett. He's still with us. He went to UCLA in the late 60s. He was part of the black independent movement there that came out of the riots of the 60s. And he's made a number of amazing films. The New York Times actually went so far as to say he's the nation's least known great filmmaker and most gifted black director. Probably best known lately for his film, The Killer of Sheep, from 1978. This was a film that actually never got released until 2007 because of music rights issues, and is part of the Library of Congress's National Film Registry. A lot of his films are set in Watts or the black community in Los Angeles, and again, really delve into the black experience and family life, images and sounds that a lot of films of their time were not really grappling with, and really saw himself as a contrast to the blaxploitation. We started with Melvin Van Peebles. Charles Burnett was really trying to bring a much more naturalism and cinema verite style to mm-hmm. depicting Black lives on screen. So I wanted to throw out Charles Burnett.
He's very important in every film, not just the as far as the Black cinema, but as a cinematic genius, the man has made such a mark in the world of film.
Are there some particular film titles that you want to throw out that people should look at this month?
I love to go back in time because we like to go back into the history of film. And a film called The Imitation of Life, which was originally made in the 1930s with Claudette Colbert and recreated in the 1950s with Lana Turner. It is the story of a woman who, in essence, hires a servant, if you will, whose daughter is half Black, half white, and refuses to accept that as her lifestyle. It is a very overwhelming film, relationships between mother and daughter. I think the 1930s film almost captures the understanding more than the splash of the 1950s film. However, it does make a mark and shows how in every time, whether it was the 30s or the 50s, success came to the white woman and not necessarily to the Black woman. And her daughter, who didn't have the benefits that the other woman's daughter has, was obviously not going to become what she could be. And it was a very sad look at life and times, but a beautiful film, both films, very stunning and very telling of the times.
Unblinking in the racial side of the story. And 1934, that film came out just around the time of the code, mm-hmm. production code coming
right.
into enforcement. I can't imagine it being made in 1935, but that film, not only deals with, as you say, these two women and their bond and the struggles they have with their own daughters, but Louise Beavers, who's the Black maid servant, mm-hmm. her daughter, who has light skin, all about passing for white and her aspirations to leave her own race and identity behind. Mm-hmm. Really fascinating for 1934. Another film from the 30s that always gets me is Showboat, the James Whale directed film from 1936. I think still the best Showboat. Starring mm-hmm. Paul Robeson, someone
exactly.
we just spoke about, who really went to bat with Oscar Hammerstein, who wrote the stage musical. And Robeson had played the same character on the stage, but when it was time to make the film, he wanted to take the N-word out of his most famous musical number in that film, and it finally got replaced with Darkies, not too much better by today's standards. But mm-hmm. for its time, Robeson used what little power he had at the time to make that change. And it's fascinating when I think about Showboat because, of course, it's about life on the Mississippi. Most of the Blacks in it are very stereotypically crafted in their characterizations. But Robeson's size, the regalness with which he comports himself, his voice, his intonations, and his erudition, it's all you can think about with that film.
And he steals the film.
It's not necessarily his film, but when it's all over and you think back to that film, you can think of none of the white actors. It's just Paul Robeson.
It's just Paul Robeson, yes. Again, he was an operatic tenor. He was a Shakespearean actor. And there were films like Cabin in the Sky in the 1940s.
Oh, delightful.
And Stormy Weather. Musicians, I think about musicians all the time. But Fats Waller, Cab Calloway, Dizzy Gillespie, Duke Ellington, they were featured in these films that were only released to limited audiences, mm-hmm. which is artistically, what a crime that was. But when you watch them now, and it's great that Turner Classic Movies shows these films and brings them to life, is that you see such incredible talent that as far as an MGM musical goes, that should have been the way. These were the powerful forces in the arts in the 1940s. Vincent Minnelli did direct Cabin in the Sky, and it was the only MGM musical that Lena Horne starred in, which was truly unreal that she was as beautiful as she was, as talented as she was, and as good as an actress. So we hope that now, with all of the directors that you mentioned earlier in the broadcast, that now we have more of an understanding of art. There should be no borders or boundaries, ever.
Just to close things out, I wanted to talk about an organization, not a person or a film, the NAACP did something really interesting back in the 40s. They set up an office in Hollywood, and they set up a committee to monitor the portrayal of blacks in studio films. Obviously, in the 40s and 50s, they didn't have a lot of pull in Hollywood, but there was small progress over that time. And in 1967, they established the Image Awards, which really focused lobbying efforts over the next few decades in Hollywood on how, on places for blacks in popular films, and really pushing for roles which showed black men and women as authority figures, as positions of professionalism. And a lot of people point to those decades as setting us up for even something like the Obama presidency, that we had to see black presidents on film first before we could get into our head that that could be normalized and that could be a thing. And so the NAACP for decades has been in Hollywood behind the scenes,
yes, they have,
pushing and advocating for African Americans to be given places in films that they'd been shut out of for decades. And that opened up a lot of avenues, not only for contemporary filmmakers, but for people in all walks of life across this nation. So I wanted to shout out to them and shine a little light on that.
That's right. As we mention all of the people that we've talked about, even from Harry Belafonte, Lena Horne, Dorothy Dandridge, they were all early members of the NAACP and were oftentimes criticized. And a lot of times it hurt their individual careers as they were trying to launch them in Hollywood. But kudos to the world for understanding.
Well, this all makes me want to get my DVD spinning and rewatch some of these films. So thanks for joining me today, Philippa.
Thank you for having me.
My guest today has been Philippa Solis, Executive Director of El Paso Pro Musica and avid cinephile. We've been discussing some of the underappreciated African-American filmmakers who were cinema pioneers and a few films that tackled the issue of race in new ways. For an expanded version of our conversation, log on to ktep.org. On Film's producer is Lauren Terrazas. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.